And now,
great to be back.
Back to the Bill Frank Radio Show.
Awesome.
And your host, Bill Frank.
Welcome back. How's this for something that impacts our daily lives? A recent Oxford University study argues that jobs are at risk of being automated in 47% of all occupational categories over the next 20 years. Couple that with the fact that the proportion of American adults participating in the labor force recently hit its lowest level since 1978, and you can see that there's an unemployment crisis looming. How are governments and schools prepared to deal with this looming crisis? Joining me today to discuss this is Joyce Joya, one of this country's most sought-after experts in human relations and employment trends. Joyce is the president and CEO of Herman Group and Employer of Choice International Incorporated. She's a strategic business futurist and certified management consultant focusing on the human side of the enterprise. Joyce serves on the National Board for the World Future Society and the Steering Committee of the Edison International Awards. She's often quoted in the media, including Business Week, Entrepreneur, the Christian Science Monitor, National Public Radio, and USA Today. In fact, last April, USA Today named Joyce their first Road Warrior of the Year. Joining me from Austin, Texas, welcome back to the show, Joyce. How are you doing?
Thanks, Bill. It's great to be back with you.
Let me just set the stage for our discussion here. In 2013, a paper by Carl Benedict Frey and Michael Osborne of the University of Oxford reckoned that jobs are at high risk of being automated in 47% of job categories. Now, automation can mean anything from using robots, websites, self-serve kiosks, or interactive voice response to replace humans doing the jobs. Think of the categories of the mid-skill kind of jobs that automation has already killed off, things like travel agents, stockbrokers, bank tellers, and even stenographers, just to name a few. And thanks to the exponential rise in the processing power and the ubiquity of digitalized information, what we're now calling big data, computers are increasingly able to perform complicated tasks more cheaply and effectively than people. So, Joyce, in your estimation, how big of a problem is this, and is the Oxford University study overstating the situation?
No, but it's also important. I don't think that the Oxford University study is overstating the issue, but I do believe that it's important to put it in perspective, and that is 47% of the job categories. Now, that does not necessarily mean 47% of the employed people in the world. In fact, it could be more or less, because we don't really know. Nobody did that math. But it really is highly selective depending on the degree to which we can automate that particular job. For instance, you know, like the ones that you talked about, tellers and stockbrokers and certainly travel agents. Most of us who do a lot of travel book our own travel online. And it's because we can be more discriminating. It gives us a greater opportunity to be in control. And that's something that some of us value. Others of us value the more personal touch, and that's where you're going to see less effect on those job categories.
Well, that is true, and the service sector has been hit. And by no means do I want to imply that all travel agents have disappeared. Of course, they haven't. That being said, you still look at those job categories, and they have been decimated. Lots of people who were stockbrokers are now doing something else. And the reality is that there's been a mass migration, particularly in the service sector, of people who have been displaced into other categories. Then came the Great Recession of 2007 through 2009, and that has created the highest and longest-lasting unemployment since the Great Depression back in the 1930s. And over the past 7 years, the argument has raged as to whether or not this unemployment is systemic or it's secular. Which do you believe it is?
I believe it's a combination of both, interestingly, and because I believe that it's cyclical in the sense that we did have this economic downturn, which was caused by other influences. And once, to a degree, we come out of that, there is going to be an improvement. However, it's not going to be an improvement to the degree that we've had in the past. Oh, let me tell you a really quick story. I used to do some work with the National Postgraduate School, which is the Navy's business graduate school out in Monterey, California. And one of the guys in my class, one of my classes, was the new CO, which is commanding officer, of a brand new ship that the Navy was just putting into service. And he was going to have a crew for this huge ship, a crew of 75, where in the past you would have had 275 people handling that. The issue was that you needed each of those 75 people to be ever so much more highly skilled than the 275 were in the past, because you had, particularly on the bridge, which he said was similar to a Star Trek bridge. He said you had to, each person on the bridge was responsible for five different systems. So I said to him, what happens when somebody gets sick? What happens when someone wants to take a vacation? I said, you're going to need to do huge cross-training. And then you're also going to have additional duplication of people and skills just to make sure that you'll be covered 100% of the time. And he looked at me and he said, I don't think anybody thought of that.
You've got to be kidding me. The cross-training has got to be fundamental to all of this. And I agree with
Absolutely.
The thesis of the story. The thesis is that there are fewer and fewer people employed. They need to be higher skilled, which will bring us back to education, which I want to talk about in just a minute, Joyce. But the reality is that if this is cyclical in nature, this unemployment is cyclical in nature, we're out of the recession, at least a way classic economists look at it. So why aren't businesses hiring back? And I would contend that it's systemic, because the fact is they don't need those people. And it took the recession of 2007 to 2009 to show them that they didn't need those people.
Well, I would dispute that to a degree, because unfortunately you have in many organizations one person doing the work that three or four or even five did in the past. And the problem is that we have increased productivity and increased productivity on the backs of the workers here in this country. And many of them are burned out. They just can't do it anymore. I just answered a query last night talking about what do you do? How do you approach your boss when you need them to know you can't handle the same level of work anymore, and yet you don't want to lose your job?
And so how does one handle that? That's a great classic dilemma.
It is a great classic dilemma. And that what you have to do is you have to show how valuable you are. But it really also depends on how replaceable you are. Because if you are replaceable and you can't handle it, then your boss may be able to find someone else who can, in spite of the fact that you carry a huge amount of intellectual capital, depending on how long you've worked in your organization. There's tenure equity and there's talent equity, and both of those things need to be taken into account.
That's a very good observation. My guest is Joyce Gioia. She is the CEO of the Herman Group. Joyce, I want to change it up a little bit and talk about this unemployment or this looming 47% automation that's going to happen in many jobs, and ask, what does that mean for our two biggest demographic groups that are out there? I mean, if the Oxford study is correct, there's going to mean a real shift for the millennials, who are about 80 million strong in this country, and the baby boomers. So how is this going to impact the baby boomers, and how is this going to impact the millennials?
Well, the answer is, unfortunately, it depends. And the baby boomers, let's start with the baby boomers. Many of the baby boomers are retiring. They have seen their stock portfolios come back up to a degree, not to the degree that they would all like, but to the point where they're really ready to retire, or at least do phase retirement. So they may just choose not to work anymore, although many of them are doing what we call re-careering, which is choosing to do other things rather than the high-stress jobs. the millennials are a totally different issue. And it's because the millennials are still in a position to learn and grow. And they will have to be massively retrained. We're going to have millennials in these massive open online courses, the MOOCs, in record numbers. And our challenge is, and I've taken a MOOC myself, I wanted to take one, not only because I wanted the information that was in there on gamification, which is a really big area, a really big subject, perhaps for another show, because it is revolutionizing some aspects of the way we live, but yet it's not meeting its promise because it's not being done in the way that it needs to be done. But so I wanted to take this MOOC. I wanted to take this online course, and it was very challenging. And I'm a member of Mensa. So if I'm a member of Mensa and it was so challenging, perhaps it's my age, because I am a baby boomer, but it was very challenging and did require, on my part, a whole lot more than the 4 to 5 hours a week, which it was purported to be taking.
Did you complete it? That's the big question,
I
Joyce.
I did, and I got my certificate. One of the things about me, and it is a characteristic of many baby boomers, is that we are persistent, and we will see things through until the end. It's one of our value qualities, ask any employer.
It is, but at the same time, Joyce, you are one of 10%. Only 10% of the people who sign up for a MOOC complete. So your persistence paid off. Then the big
question—I just wrote about that.
Oh, did you? Well, the big question becomes: what's the payoff for you? You get a certificate. The big question is: who recognizes that certificate? Suppose you took your MOOC from Harvard or from Stanford. Those are great institutions, but do businesses respect the degrees that you get from MOOCs?
That's a very good question. And I did not take it because I wanted the certificate, although it is now on my CV. I took it because I wanted the information that was there. And I think that the answer is that it depends. Now, the fact that you get a certificate from a Coursera or from the edX, which is the MIT Harvard online institution, I think should be important to employers, but it should be important not just because the individual earned it and now knows that information, but also because of what it means in terms of the fact that they did push to see it through and they did apply themselves to the degree that was needed to make that happen. My guess is that in the future, we're going to see a lot more chunking of this online content, because it is that chunking that will enable people to have the intermediate successes that they'll need to have. We may, for instance, drag the gamification course. When I took it, it was like 8 weeks, and we may end up having it be 12 weeks so that it can be in bite-sized pieces so that particularly the millennials will stick it out.
All right. My guest is Joyce Gioia. Now, Joyce, I want to come back to the millennials, because you very flippantly said, well, they just need to be retrained, and that's easier said than done. And the big question is, while they're taking these MOOCs to get retrained, who pays for it? Does the employer pay for it? Does the millennial pay for it? Do we as society pay for it? From where does the money come for this person to take the time out to attend the MOOC to increase his or her CV?
I think it's going to come from a combination, just as it is already. And if you've been highly valued, if the employer knows that you're a good employee and wants to keep you, they will pay for your retraining. On the other hand, if you're in a position which is going away forever, and you are one of legions of people that are losing their positions, and the employer is not interested in retraining you, then in all likelihood, it will be society. And what we saw in the past was a combination, an interesting combination of public-private partnership, where there were private organizations that worked with the public organizations, the one-stops and the other local unemployment offices, to help retrain people in a way that worked, because a lot of the retraining simply doesn't, unfortunately. And a lot of these jobs are not coming back.
All right, but if we as society are going to pay for it, from where is that money going to come? Because you yourself said that that the baby boomers are going to start to retire either by force or by choice. And as we retire, we're not going to have the money to pay into taxes. We'll have paid off our houses. All of those kinds of things will be taken care of, and we'll be paying less and less to the government. Who's going to support all of the young millennials who want to do this retraining if it falls on society?
The millennials who are working will, as well as the Gen Xers. It's not going to be a pretty sight. It's going to be very tough in the years ahead, because government has been cutting back and is totally unaware.
All right, Joyce, now I'm going to take a step back, and I'm going to make you queen for a day, just for a day. And you now have the power to advise governments. And I want you to break your advice down into two types of governments, the G8 governments, the big developed Western countries, and the emerging market governments. What would you tell government leaders in the G8 countries that they need to do now to prepare for this seismic job loss over the next 20 years?
Hire some futurists. Hire some of my colleagues in the Association for Professional Futurists and look at this issue long term in a way that is appropriate for your individual culture and for your population, because this is not a one-size-fits-all, and this is a huge issue that does need to be addressed, and it needs to be addressed in a very scientific and logical and rational way. At the same time, addressing it in China will be different than the way that it gets addressed in the United States.
Without a doubt. And I'll be putting you on a plane to see President Putin of Russia to talk to him about that. Now, let's take it away
I'm speaking in Russia on April the 7th. I'm really excited at the Future Travel Forum.
Now, sounds great. So that was G8 countries, emerging markets.
Right, yeah, the developing countries. Well, their issues are going to be different. And their issues are different because they are still going to be where the manufacturing is done. And there will be less manufacturing, but there will be manufacturing for the foreseeable future. We are not yet ready to, for 100% of our products go to 3D printing. We're just not there yet. And so we're going to see movement to Africa from countries in Asia and India, including India, rather. We're going to see the work moving to the lowest cost location, just as we have in the past.
Joyce, let's turn our attention now to education, because weaved throughout our entire conversation so far has been this need for education, whether it's you taking the MOOC or millennials needing to upgrade their skills as this seismic change happens. And my question to you is, put on your advisor's hat, how would you now advise secondary or higher education leaders to prepare for this forthcoming job loss?
The first thing they need to do is to tune into their students, which is in general not happening. And they need to understand who their students are so that they can teach their students what they will need to know. And the what they will need to know is a much higher level of technology than they currently are teaching.
Well, let me stop you right there, because in United States high schools, there are 22,000 high schools in the United States. what percentage of them offer any kind of computer science class? I will give you the answer. It's 10%. It's about 2,200 of the 22,000 high schools even offer computer science courses. So we've got a long way to go. That's 90% of the high schools need to get caught up to speed just in that one category alone.
A long way to go. And their best bet is going to be to go to local industry and partner with them and get the resources they need, whether it's the people they need to mentor their kids or the skill sets they need to teach those kids the higher levels of technology. That is going to be the key in the future. And I tell employers all the time that their key is to go into the schools.
All right, Joyce, but I hate to keep coming back to this, but I will, and that is, from where is the money going to come? I mean, in the United States, over the last 10 years, we have increased our spending on schools by 42% over the last 10 years. We now spend $941 billion.
That's really hard to believe.
But that's
a fact. It's really hard to believe, given the reducing budgets that every school district seems to have.
Yes, they're fighting yes. It, but that's the reality of it, whether it's in teacher salaries or whatever. These are government-supplied numbers. And yet, at the same time, we're spending all this money. We see our competencies on the worldwide stage in reading and in math slipping. We slipped to number 24 in reading, and now we've slipped to number 36 in math worldwide. That's ridiculous for a country that once led the world in education. So back to you, from where's this money going to come? Because we're already spending tons and getting worse and worse results in our school system.
It is truly pathetic. And to answer your question, I believe, as I said before, it's got to come from the corporations who will have a vested interest in the schools producing graduates who will be prepared for the jobs that they need to have filled.
Well, and again, that sounds good, but let me throw another statistic out at you. In 2013, this past year, 60% of the free cash flow from the S&P 500 companies went into share buybacks and dividends instead of R&D and hiring. Now, that's an unusually high historical percentage, but we don't see these companies sitting on piles of cash reinvesting them in anything for the future. In fact, we see them buying back their own shares to prop up their own share prices. What's going to be the catalyst to move these companies off the dime to get them to spend that free cash flow that we just talked about?
I see them spending. It's not the huge $90 billion that we're seeing for other things, for capitalization in terms of machinery and automation. But I see them already beginning to spend. I saw the exhibits from Raytheon. I saw the exhibits from Lockheed Martin. I spoke with the people. They're sending people into the schools. They're investing in the schools. But it's just that they're not doing it to the degree that they will need to do it in the future. And I see them moving step by step in this direction already. It's just that they're going to have to accelerate that, and there's going to have to be more Lockheed Martin and Raytheon.
Without a doubt. My guest is Joyce Gioia. She's the CEO of the Herman Group. And Joyce, we could talk literally for hours on this Oxford University study that shows that 47% of job categories will be replaced by technology. But I want to turn my attention to you because you are a wealth of knowledge and information on this. You write a weekly newsletter that addresses issues just like the ones we've been discussing. It's the Herman Trend Alert. That goes out to 29,000 people in 87 different countries in 4 different languages. Tell us a little bit about the newsletter, and if people are piqued by what they hear from you and they might want to subscribe, how could somebody subscribe to your newsletter?
They can go to www.hermantrendalert.com. Last week was on the future of online higher education, which is not only, by the way, MOOCs, but it's also online education from organizations like Drexel University's new online school that Susan Aldridge left the University of Maryland University College to come head up. And it is the Courseras and the edX's and the Khan Academies. And what they are doing is a phenomenal service to society, no question about it. And so I talked about that. But I talk about a very wide variety of trends, Bill. So HermanTrendAlert.com.
That is great. Joyce, it has been a delight. Thank you so much for being my special guest here on The Bill Frank Show. I'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you, Bill. Look forward to joining you again.